Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Summer is just around the corner. The sun is out, at least maybe not today, and that means it's time for a whole lot of us to start thinking about how to care for our skin. For years, of course, we tended to take skincare for granted, but these days it's a whole different story as we've learned more about the dangers of melanoma and exactly how damaging the sun can be on unprotected skin. We've got a couple of great experts today to walk us through how to be smart when it comes to skincare, and all this comes in the midst of Skincare Awareness Month. They are Dr. Amy Jo Knopper. She's the Dermatology Division Director at Children's Mercy Hospital. She's also a professor of pediatrics and dermatology at the UMKC School of Medicine. Amy, so good to have you. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Molly Menser is also here. She's with Sunflower Dermatology. She's a graduate of the Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences. And Molly, good morning to you too. So good to have you.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, Amy, is the word out about the need to slather on the lotion during the summertime, or are there still lots of folks out there who just aren't tuned into that idea yet?
Well, that's a great question, Steve. I think we've learned so much over the last few decades about the harmful effects of sun exposure. But I feel like behavioral changes and practices are really lagging behind.
And what's it going to take to get people more engaged, do you think? Even after all this publicity, all this attention to it, you think everybody would be plugged in by now?
That's another excellent question. I wish I knew the answer to that one, because if you can give me some strategies to educate our families and influence them in that way, I think that would be really important. But I think early education is super important.
Molly, what are you noticing out there in terms of more and more folks sort of figuring out they've got to take care of themselves when they're out in the sun?
I think it is becoming more widely recognized in the adult population.
Yeah.
Parents that I see in my practice are doing a better job of protecting their children. I think they are becoming more conscious of sunscreen use, but there are a lot of other methods to protect from the sun that maybe aren't becoming as widely appreciated. Broad-rimmed hats, sunglasses, ultraviolet protective clothing, swim attire are all wonderful ways in addition to sunscreen that probably are more effective and probably safer.
That's interesting. Are teenagers also plugged in here? Are they aware of what they need to do and taking care of themselves?
Honestly, it is the more difficult population.
Really?
Still the idea of seeking sun to have a tan look is desired. And so I see a lot of adolescents and teen girls that do want that tan look. And getting the message across that there is no safe tan is a difficult one to get across because they do want the appealing look of a tan.
Do either of you guys get out in the sun in the summertime and get a tan, quote unquote? Do you do it?
No, not in a long time. I used to when I was a teenager. I used to love to get a tan.
Me
but,
too.
Not any longer now that I really understand the harmful effects. And I'm vain also. I know that it causes, sun exposure is now known to cause about 90% of the visible aging that we see on the skin. So for reasons, concerns of skin cancer as well as photoaging of the skin, I really avoid a tan.
So you're done.
I'm done tanning.
Yeah. Molly, how about you?
Likewise. Absolutely done tanning. And, certainly I'm thinking about skin cancer as I am in the sun. I think about what's happening to my skin. But I'm with Amy. Vanity is as much of a reason to stay out of the sun because either definitely the rays are inducing sunspots and wrinkles on everyday exposure, not just the kind of sun that we're actually seeking.
But that's sort of long-term thinking as opposed to the short-term benefit, again, quote-unquote, of having a nice summer tan, right?
Right, absolutely. And I will say that I do fun things. I have a lot of patients that say, oh, I'm a lake person. I can't do all of those things. But on the contrary, I too am a lake person and like snorkeling and doing a lot of fun outdoor things, but certainly use protective clothing and hats and proper application of sunscreen so that I can do all of those fun things.
Now, I'm wondering, Amy, if you can tell us how dangerous it is to get even one fairly intense sunburn.
Well, it's pretty shocking. What we've learned is that one blistering sunburn can actually double an individual's lifetime risk of melanoma.
So one blistering sunburn can double your chances of melanoma down the road.
Exactly.
Wow.
And five sunburns in which you don't blister or peel, five sunburns during childhood also will double your risk of melanoma during a lifetime. So incredibly important not to have our children sunburning.
I think I've had probably at least five during the course of my lifetime, my childhood. I can remember at least five. So I should be seeing a doctor periodically to make sure I'm in good shape with my skin.
I think that's always an excellent idea to see your physician or to see a dermatologist to get a full skin exam, because it's difficult to see every portion of your skin to see if there are any lesions that might, any skin spots that might be worrisome, or at risk for developing some type of skin cancer down the road.
You know, I know our listeners will have lots of questions this morning about skincare, sunburns, and what it all means, how to protect yourself during these hot summer days that are just coming down the road. Boy, they're slow in coming this year, but we think at some point this summer we'll have some hot summer weather. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org. You can also tweet us at kcur up to date. Well, Molly, give us some very basic guidelines here. When do you recommend that kids and adults apply suntan lotion? What should they be thinking about?
A number of things to think about. First of all, you want to choose a sunscreen that is at least a SPF of 30. That means sun protection factor. That is a minimum of 30. More than that is okay, but you should have a minimum of 30. It should be something that is stated to be broad spectrum, which means that it filters out UVA and UVB rays.
Both sets of rays, and we'll talk a little more about that as we go on today, but there's two sets of rays, and your lotion should get both of them, you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It should also say that it is water resistant. Another important technique and application is to apply 15 to 30 minutes prior to sun exposure. And then again, reapplying is very important, and reapplying every hour to 2 hours after swimming or heavy sweating or towel drying. And another important thing, and one of the most important, is that most people don't use enough sunscreen.
So really?
Absolutely. So we need to use about 1 ounce full to the entire body, not covered by a swimsuit. So that for the average adult, 1 ounce is a considerable amount, and most people don't use that much. And that's how much should be reapplied every hour during that reapplication process. And approximately a teaspoon is how much should go on the face.
And just for the record, Coppertone is not financing your visit here on Up to Date today, right?
Absolutely.
This is just straightforward advice.
No conflict of interest there.
Yeah. Amy, what else would you throw into the kitty here that people should think about?
Well, I would agree with everything Molly has just said, but I think, as Molly was mentioning earlier, not just depending on sunscreen, but protective clothing in addition to sunscreen. There's been some controversy over the years about could sunscreen actually be harmful, and I think the main reason that sunscreen can be harmful is people can choose to spend, you know, 8-10 hours out in the sun without burning and instead just get a deep dark tan. So I think we have to caution people that they still want to try to time their sun exposure, if possible, early in the day or late in the afternoon.
As opposed to the peak hours, right?
Exactly. You know, if there's an activity for your children, for example, if they can take swim lessons earlier in the morning or later than the afternoon, rather than having them out between, you know, 12 and 2, for example, that will have less intense sun rays during those hours.
Now, this waterproof idea that, you know, some lotions you buy have that word sort of printed on the bottle, and it's, you know, it's waterproof. I've read in prep for this show, I read a little bit that maybe that's not really, these new guidelines suggest that waterproof stuff isn't really all that effective, and never mind, it's not going to matter that much anyway. What do you go by?
Well, the new labeling is actually will state that it's water resistant, and it will categorize it as either being 40 minutes water resistant or 80 minutes water resistant.
And that means what exactly?
Well, I think it is unlikely to wash off. I don't know that anything is 100% waterproof, but if it does specify that it's 80% water resistant, you're probably going to be fine with normal outdoor activities and sweating and swimming for a period of 80 minutes and then need to reapply afterwards.
Oh, I see. Yeah, how do they make suntan lotion that's actually sort of water resistant? How does that happen? Any idea? If I knew, I'd be in that business probably, right?
I don't know specifically, actually, to tell you the truth, Steve. My hunch is that the vehicle, meaning the properties of the lotion or the cream itself, probably are less likely to break down or maybe less water soluble. And so that is my hunch. Now, the ingredients, specifically zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, are minerals. They are sort of the best to withstand water immersion. So that too, is in addition to looking at the labeling, you want to look at the active ingredients on the label and know that if you have something with zinc oxide or titanium dioxide, that those are known to be the most efficacious. They're also the safest because they're not absorbed by the body. They just sit on the skin.
So water resistant, though, Amy, you buy the idea that some of those products are, in fact, water resistant for at least some period of time.
Yes, definitely. And I think, you know, if your children are swimming or they're going to be doing athletic activities where they're sweating a lot, the individual or the parent should definitely look for products that say water resistant on them and preferably the 80-minute time frame.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Again, we're talking about care of your skin during these hot summer months. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org, or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Rich from Prairie Village. Good morning, Rich.
Hi, good morning. I have a question that's a slight bit different, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyway. I have dried skin on my feet, and I'm diabetic, and I'm supposed to try to keep that skin soft. And my podiatrist recommended something called amylactin. But on the other hand, I read that that also makes your skin more sun sensitive. So what's the story there, and what should I do?
What should Rich do? Who wants to field that one?
I can take that one.
Molly, yeah.
Very common to have severely dry skin on the feet. I'm glad that you're seeing somebody for it. I'd continue to see them. Amylactin can be very effective. But if you're using it on your feet, it's probably less likely that you're going to be more sun sensitive there if you're wearing socks and shoes and it's on the bottom of your feet. But if you are using it all over, just be sure that you are following some of the sun protection tips we're talking about today. Thanks for your call.
Does that help, Rich?
Well, the bottom line is keep using it and wear socks. Is that it?
And sunscreen.
On the feet, on top of that stuff?
Yeah, if you're wearing shoes and socks, you're absolutely okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good luck with it, Rich.
All right, thanks.
Okay, again, our phone number here again, 816-235-2888, and our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org. Amy, I'm just wondering, we're having this conversation. There's so much more emphasis on care of the skin during the summer months. We're having these conversations. Why? Is it because changes in the climate, the whatever, have made us more susceptible to damaging sun rays than perhaps, you know, we were 15, 20 years ago?
Well, I think the big concern is the dramatic increase we're seeing in the rate of melanoma as well as other skin cancers. And what we've learned is that over the past 40 years, the increased rate for women is 800%, so huge increase. And for men, it's about 400%. So in this day and age, in our country, the risk of melanoma is 1 in 50 people are going to develop melanoma, which we know is a deadly skin cancer if it's not detected early.
Those are staggering numbers.
Yes, they're really quite frightening. I mean, these numbers have even changed in the time that I've been in practice. And then just last month, there was an article in our pediatrics journal describing the increased risk in children. So we're seeing melanoma in younger and younger patients. And I don't think we completely understand the reason for this dramatic increase. There are a lot of things that may factor into this. I think the concern and one of the most likely causes is the increase in indoor tanning that we've seen over the last 40 years. Indoor tanning was introduced in 1979. So time-wise, it correlates very nicely with this huge increase in melanoma that we're seeing in our country.
That brings up the whole topic of tanning beds. And I gather by what you're saying that you're not a big fan. Amy, am I right about that?
No, I'm passionately opposed to the use of tanning beds. I think it's far more dangerous than natural sun exposure. Studies of tanning beds have shown that actually one tanning bed exposure, The amount of ultraviolet radiation that's emitted in one tanning bed use can be the equivalent of going out into the midday Mediterranean sun 10 to 12 times. So it's such an intense amount of sun exposure that you're getting in this short period of time that you're getting far more damage than you would if you were just going outside, you know, for an hour in Kansas City, for example. So it's very intense sun exposure, and there's a lot of concern on the dermatologist's part that tanning beds are not regulated, that individuals are using them more frequently than advised. So there's just a lot of problems, and particularly the target population for tanning beds is the group of patients where we're seeing this huge increase in melanoma. It's believed that more than 70% of tanning bed users are young women, and that is where we're seeing this huge increase in melanoma.
Are there as many tanning bed businesses these days as there used to be? I don't see them as often as I used to, or is it just me?
It's a growing industry.
It's still a growing industry.
Absolutely growing
really?
Industry.
Mm-hmm. Despite all this?
Unfortunately, yes. And there's a lot of, I think, unfortunate claims made by the industry to indicate safety or to claim safety to the public. There's concern about, for instance, there are labeling on some beds that are referred to as high-pressure or low-pressure beds that are safe and don't cause a burn. What's happening with those beds is that there's a higher proportion of ultraviolet A rays. Those rays are known to cause fewer burns than ultraviolet B rays. However, they penetrate deeper into the skin and are more likely associated with melanoma, again, pointing to why we're thinking that one of the reasons of increased risk of melanoma or increased incidence of melanoma is the tanning bed exposure.
So does the consumer, when he or she walks into the tanning bed salon, indicate whether they want high pressure or low pressure? Is that a choice the consumer makes?
In my study of some of the offerings of websites of tanning salons in the Kansas City area, and you can go to their websites to see different offerings of which types of beds that you might want to use, and there are different options.
But so I gather if you had your way, Molly, mm-hmm. you would stand in front of a tanning bed salon with a sign, and you'd carry it in front of the place saying, "Don't do this. You're making a big mistake."
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel passionately, like Amy, that we're really harming the individuals, and the people that are tend to seek tanning are the teens. We know that tanning process is potentially addictive and really in a population that is susceptible to forming behaviors that are addictive. And with the tremendous increase, in fact, the use of a tanning bed, the intermittent use of a tanning bed, increases the risk of melanoma by 75%. Multiple studies have indicated that one session increases the risk by 20%. And so with this small or with a young population, we're just really putting them in harm's way by giving them a false notion that it's safe.
Now, I suppose, Amy, that tanning is a little bit like money. Once you get going on it, you can never get enough of it. Is that sort of what the mindset becomes? Because, you know, Molly just mentioned this whole idea of addictive, you know, use of – am I right about that?
Well, I think there's growing evidence that does show that tanning in general may have some addictive qualities to that. And there are a number of studies that have shown it may also be associated with other high-risk activities. There are studies that have shown that children of mothers that have their first tanning exposure with their parent are four times more likely to become regular indoor tanning bed users. So I think, you know, we're learning more and more that this certainly can be addictive. There have been studies that have shown that increases beta endorphin levels and increases that feeling of calmness. So I think it's something to be aware of when you're educating young patients that it may be a difficult habit to break.
Just some numbers I got from the National Cancer Institute last night. More than 76,000 men and women in the U.S. will be diagnosed with melanoma this year, and 9,500 are expected to die from melanoma at some point this year. Those are significant numbers, aren't they?
They're really quite staggering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you say, again, the numbers are only going up.
Yes, and I know, you know, at my hospital, we've had a growing number of pediatric patients that have been diagnosed with melanoma and are being treated and followed for that. So even our young population is at risk.
So you're seeing kids, what, 12, 10, 13 years old?
Yes, we've seen kids that young. And
wow.
In those children, they're, you know, it's probably not only secondary to sun exposure. There are probably genetic tendencies to develop melanoma in that population. But when you look at teens and young adults that are diagnosed with melanoma, many of them do have a history of tanning. Many of them have a history of indoor tanning bed use as well. So
there is a genetic factor involved with all this?
Yes. We know that if you have a first-degree relative that was diagnosed with melanoma, meaning a sibling or a parent, that individual's risk is three times greater for developing melanoma. So those are patients that really should get a full skin exam from a dermatologist and be followed carefully.
All right. Again, our topic this morning, skin care as the summer approaches. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, update@kcur.org. We had this question from a listener. Can people who have darker complexions stay in the sun longer than those who have light complexions? Are exposure rules still the same, Molly?
If we have a lighter skin type, we are more prone to burning more quickly in the sun than a darker skin type. Darker skin type types have more melanin, which is our inherent sort of protection from the sun. So there is darker skin folks are able to stay out longer than light skin folks before being damaged by the sun. However, that sometimes has given some of my patients a false sense of security when they're out, and that still dark skin folks do need to wear some protection. We do see melanoma across all skin types and skin colors. We certainly see a growing number of melanomas, not just in the Caucasian population, but in African Americans, Asians, and Hispanics.
Okay. 816-235-2888. Connor from Lawrence. Connor, you're on Up to Date. Our topic today, skin care during the summer. Good morning.
Hi. Good, Sarah. Thanks for covering this topic.
Sure.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That maybe doesn't get enough attention. My comment is I don't wear sunscreen. I work in the sun every day. I do wear long-sleeve shirts and wide-brim hats. So the reason I don't is because of potential carcinogens in nearly every sunscreen that I could find. And I guess it's a comment, but I just wanted to see what you all thought about that. The carcinogens I typically found are methylparaben and polyparaben, among some other potential carcinogens. And I don't know. I just wanted to see what your thought about that.
Thanks, Connor. Again, carcinogens in sunscreen products themselves. What can you tell us about that, Molly?
There are a variety of different compounds that are used as sunscreen molecules. The safest that we've identified really are zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. So when you're looking at the back of a label under active ingredients, I would suggest looking for those ingredients. Any ingredient listed under active ingredient is a chemical sunscreen, and those are more absorbed by the body. So if you want to have something that you know is the safest, I would seek out zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. Now, the ingredients that you've mentioned, the paraben family, those are actually preservatives that are used as stabilizers in a lot of different cosmetic products, so not just sunscreen. So you might want to, if that's a concern for you, look at the other hygiene products that you might be using. They're widely used in everything from topical moisturizers to shampoos, and there are some growing concerns about them. I think we don't have enough evidence yet to have enough knowledge to say that they're directly carcinogenic, or we know that they are in fact carcinogenic, but I appreciate your concern, and in that case, you can find paraben-free physical sunscreens, again, zinc oxide and titanium dioxide.
It's kind of a scary idea to me that there are carcinogens in some of these products. I mean, that seems a little counterintuitive to me.
It's very early yet. I think we don't have a lot of convincing evidence as to which compounds are more concerning, but certainly all those are listed on the back of a label. So if that's a concern for you, you can seek out a product, whether it's sunscreen or other hygiene products.
Okay. Let's go to Nancy from Parkville. Nancy, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is a little more cosmetic. I now wear sunscreen to protect my skin, but are there any treatments available to reduce the hyperpigmentation and that sort of age spot stuff that is on my face and maybe others?
Sunspots.
That's a great question. We have that. We see that and hear that question every day. Certainly, first and foremost, like you're doing, is your sun protection. So on a daily basis, and that's where our conversation switches from seeking direct sun to just really the everyday sun that we get on a daily basis in the car, in and out of the store. You know, we end up eating lunch outside or walking the dog, and we don't even think about really some of that routine sun that we're getting. The American Academy of Dermatology does recommend using a minimum of SPF 30 daily on exposed areas. So first and foremost, that's definitely what you want to do, and glad to hear that you are doing that. Other things that are gaining more recognition about how to treat some of those things are topical antioxidants, namely vitamin C and E derived products. Those can be used on the face to help with pigmentation. And they also are, studies have indicated that we're more protected from the sun when we combine topical antioxidants and sunscreens. Furthermore, there's other bleaching agents, something called hydroquinone, vitamin A derivatives, namely something called retinols or retinoid family of products. Those can be used and are helpful in reducing some of the effects of the long-term photoaging that we see. Good question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Good luck. I read somewhere that, say it's wintertime and you're thinking about taking a trip down south to get out of the cold, or summertime's coming and you want to prepare your body. Amy, does it make any sense to sort of begin applying sunscreen, you know, weeks ahead of your exposure to sort of prepare your skin? I read somewhere that some folks think that's a good idea.
To apply sunscreen weeks ahead of
weeks
going
ahead
on
of
the
time,
trip.
You're not actually going outside, but you're just preparing your skin by putting sun lotion on it and getting it ready for intense summer sun exposure.
Yeah, I actually hadn't heard of people doing that, but I think mainly just using sunscreens or sun protection when you're going outside. I don't see that there would be any benefit of putting it on your skin
weeks ahead
if you
of
were,
time.
No.
But doing it maybe 20 or 30 minutes ahead of time makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Okay. What I hear more commonly are individuals who are going out and trying to get sort of a base tan before they go on their vacation, whether it be natural sunlight or indoor tanning. And really a base tan doesn't give you significant sun protection. It's probably the equivalent of using a sunscreen with an SPF of about 3 to 4.
Oh.
So even when we're tan, or even as Molly was talking about in darker-skinned individuals, we have some extra protection, but it's certainly not adequate for extensive sun exposure.
So a base tan may not be that good of an idea.
No, you're really just getting more sun exposure in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about skin care during the summer with two doctors, Dr. Amy Jo Knopper, Dr. Molly Menser. We'll get your questions and phone calls to 816-235-2888 and our email address updatedate@kcur.org. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about summer skin care as the hot summer sun is about to begin affecting all of us. One other real basic question, Amy, what about spray sunscreens? Are they just as safe as lotions? Do you recommend them? Do you not recommend them? What do you think?
Well, in general, I'm not a big fan of the spray sunscreens, but I realize for some of my patients that may be the only thing that they're willing to use, especially I think athletic young men are more likely to use sprays. The studies have shown that you don't get as much of the sunscreen on your skin, so I think that's one concern. So I'm not a big fan, but in general, if that's the only thing you can get a patient to use, I think it's worth doing. There also have been some reports of problems with the flammability of the spray sunscreen, so I think you have to use common sense when you're using them and not do it near a grill or things like that, but there have been some injuries related to the sunscreen
again,
sprays.
I read somewhere when it comes to spray sunscreens that maybe you need to apply them twice when you put them on, just to give yourself the adequate protection you need out there.
That may be helpful, spraying it in your hand and then putting it on your body rather than spraying it in the air, because you lose a lot of that spray to the environment. But then I don't know if the person who likes the spray, if they're spraying it in their hand, it's really not all that different than applying a sunscreen lotion on their skin.
I read somewhere, too, the FDA is currently investigating the risks of accidentally inhaling spray sunscreens. What do we know about that?
I know it's a concern, you know, the aerosolized products, but I don't really know too much about the data that's available yet. I don't know if, Molly, if you've had any learned anything about that.
I don't either, but I have cautioned people about where they are spraying it and just the propellant that might be used to apply the sunscreen or to project it from the bottle, I think is a reasonable concern, like most aerosol-type products.
And there's just one concern after another here when it comes to all this. Absolutely. I should have pointed out our guest today, Dr. Amy Knopper. She's with the Dermatology Division Director at Children's Mercy Hospital. And Dr. Molly Menser is with Sunflower Dermatology. Again, our number, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Gail from Bayshore. Gail, good morning. You there, Gail? as I messed up Baser anyway. Let's go to Mark from Kansas City, Missouri. Mark, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thanks, Mark.
Good. I'll describe myself first, which is red hair in the family, blue eyes, and freckles. And I was a yard cutter when I was younger and swam some. So I got lots of burns growing up. And I've been going to the dermatologist twice a year, probably for 6, 7, 10 years maybe. About a year and a half ago, I went, and my dermatologist, as usual, would notice something on the left side of my neck. And so she removed it, and bottom line is it was diagnosed shortly thereafter as melanoma in situ. So I caught it very early, which was great. But I just thought a couple things. One, for the callers to know, when you drive, you know, wearing that sunscreen every day, the left side of your face and your left hand and all that get exposed to the sun, that's important to cover. And I use a 15. I'd love to know what the doctors would recommend for a 30 on the face as a moisturizer, because, you know, you don't want to look kind of greasy but during your day. But so that's one. Secondly, I'd love them to go over the ABCs of identifying melanoma on the skin. And then lastly, I just wonder, does Epudex, I've gone through some Epudex treatments before having melanoma in situ, and I'm wondering, would that protect you against, you know, the development of melanoma?
Mark, why don't you hang on the line to make sure we cover your questions here.
Sure.
How about the ABCs of identifying melanoma? Do you want to take that one, Amy?
Sure. The A stands for asymmetry. So when you're looking at your moles, we worry more about moles that are different on one side compared to the other. A symmetric mole is more likely to be a safe mole or a healthy mole. Hmm. The B stands for border. And we like to see nice round or oval moles that have smooth, regular borders. So if a border is irregular or blurred or indistinct, that can sometimes be a warning factor. C stands for color. We like moles that are constant in their color and don't vary a lot in their color. So if a mole is changing in color or has different colors within it, that could be concerning. And then D is a little bit controversial. D stands for diameter. And historically, we've worried more about moles that are greater than 6 millimeters in size. But we know that you can have melanomas that are far smaller than 6 millimeters. And there are many safe moles that are greater than 6 millimeters. And then finally, they added eon, which is for evolution. And I think this is one of the most important things, and that is changing of your moles. So getting to know what your moles look like and watching them for any changes in color, shape, texture, or development of symptoms such as bleeding, itching, pain, that sort of thing. That's really what a patient needs to be watching for.
Mark, what else? Yeah, go ahead.
You know, what I was going to say, and it really probably fits with C, color, but if you wanted to add an F, it's sort of one of the doctors told me family of color. You know, if you look at your body and you see something that is different than all the other things, that's something to be watching out for.
That's a great point. The dermatologists like the term the ugly duckling mole. So if there's one mole that stands out as looking different than the other in color or shape, that can be a red flag sometimes.
Mm-hmm. What about the Epidex treatment? Is that something, I know it protects against some of the other skin cancers, you know, burn them off before they actually come about maybe. But does melanoma, does that treat kind of the pre-melanoma, or do you know?
Thank you for asking that. So Effudex, just for other listeners, is a type of topical chemotherapy for the skin, also called 5-fluorouracil. And that is used, really its indication is for precancers called actinic keratoses. And so those are of a different cell lineage than melanoma altogether. And so they're 5-FU or Effudex is a good option for treating actinic keratosis, but it is not indicated for the treatment of melanoma. And it really shouldn't be thought of as preventing. It does treat precancers that turn more into squamous cell carcinoma, again, different than melanoma.
Mark, give me one more real quick one. I have a full board here. I need to move on here in just a minute.
Yeah, the last thing was just in terms of a 30 product for kind of a a moisturizer on a daily basis. Do you have specific products that you could recommend?
Yeah.
I do. For adult use, I've really enjoyed a couple of different products, and if I may be so bold to comment on brand, if that's okay.
Sure.
I am particular about sunscreen myself and for my patients because we won't wear sunscreen if we don't like it. And so finding something that's actually pleasant to wear, and you pose a good question. And so there's a company that I think has done a really good job of finding things people want to wear, and it's a scientific company called SkinCeuticals, and they do make a very pleasant product, something called Sheer Physical. It's a SPF of 50, and they also make a slightly tinted one for someone who might want that sort of product, and that is also a 50. That was a company that was the first to meet the FDA new regulations regarding sunscreen. So they do a very good job, and they create things that people want to wear.
That's SkinCeuticals, and the product you said is Sheer Physical.
Yes, or Physical Fusion.
Yeah. Hey, how about just everyday products, Coppertone, the other mm-hmm. varieties? Any reason to use those or not to use those? Any warning flags there?
No, not at all, really. Again, now that the FDA has really provided regulations, looking for something of the things that we mentioned earlier, SPF of 30, broad spectrum, and water resistant, really is. Then it comes to finding something that you like, and whatever you like is the best one to use.
Is the FDA checking these products to make sure that a SPF 50 is actually an SPF 50 and not something else?
Yes, under the recent regulations.
That's what the big change has been all about. The government's actually stepped in to ensure the mm-hmm. quality of these products. They are what they say they are.
And that the labeling is correct.
Yeah. Now, many consumers assume that an SPF of 100 is twice as effective as an SPF of 50. But some dermatologists are saying the difference between those two is actually negligible, that there's not that dramatic of a difference. Who's right on that?
Well, I think it really depends on how much sunscreen you're putting on. There was an interesting study that came out recently looking at what SPF factor people actually get using the amounts that an individual typically puts on their skin, which when they studied it, it looks like most people put on about 25 to 50% of the sunscreen as compared to the amount that's put on when the SPF factors are actually tested. So if you're only putting on a fraction, and let's say you're only putting on one quarter of the recommended amount, if you have an SPF of 50, you may be getting truly an SPF of 12.5, whereas if you're using 100, you may get an SPF of 25.
So don't skimp on the sauce.
Don't
is sort
skimp.
Of what you're
yes,
saying here,
that's
right?
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. So yeah. I think it depends, and I think if you have an underlying skin condition where you're more sensitive to sun damage, those higher SPF factors may make a difference, things like vitiligo where you're missing pigmentation in areas of skin or some of the rheumatologic conditions where you might have sun sensitivity. So I think in certain individuals, you know, an SPF of 100 versus 50 might make a difference. But in the average individual, if it's applied correctly, there's not going to be a real clinically significant difference between those two.
Jeff writes us this at UpToDate at KCUR.org. After years of worshiping the sun as a lifeguard and later in life just hanging out by the pool, my mother is now dying of cancer caused by a melanoma that metastasized into her head and liver. On top of that, my grandpa has had numerous surgeries to remove lesions, but has not succumbed to any cancer of yet. I cannot stress more to slip, slap, and slop, as the Aussies would say, to avoid what my family is going through. I gather he's talking about slapping on the lotion there mm-hmm. again. Catherine writes this, what about the problems with parabens in lotions? It is used in many products and is considered to be carcinogenic. Have we already talked about that?
We did, yes.
Okay. Is the American Cancer Society lobbying for labels at tanning salons? One other listener wrote us.
Yes, there's there is a proposal now to increase tanning beds from a device category 1 to 2, which would require them to do much more extensive labeling, making all users aware that tanning beds that UV radiation is a carcinogen. Mm-hmm. So that is something that will hopefully get approved.
Amy, tell us about children and rash guards, special shirts and shorts for kids and adults that actually block out the sun.
Those are absolutely wonderful. So rash guards come in all different shapes and sizes and forms, but they can be long sleeve shirts or short sleeve shirts. They're meant for getting wet in a swimming pool. They're usually rated with a UPF, which is very similar to an SPF. So it tells you how much ultraviolet radiation penetrates through the fabric. But that's a fabulous way to protect kids from sun exposure. And in my opinion, I have a small child. It's much easier for me to put her in a sun protective bathing suit than have to put on sunscreen, every hour or two if we're going to be outside for prolonged periods of time.
And these products are available for adults too?
Yes, they're. If you just do a Google search and just put sun protective clothing, you'll pull up a number of sun protective clothing lines that are very, very good. And if you think about it, they may be a little more money up front, but if people are using the amount of sunscreen that they should apply, you're going through probably multiple bottles of sunscreen each summer. So I think they're a very good investment as well.
So, and I could, for adults, you can wear a t-shirt instead of wearing my old cotton t-shirt that goes to pot after one or two dunkings. These things stand up over time.
Oh, yeah, they hold up well, and they're made of fabrics that are cool, that are meant for being outside. Molly can definitely speak to that because she's used a lot of these products herself, and I'm a big fan of those.
Okay. Susan writes us this, should I avoid using chemical sunscreens for my young girls age 7 and 9? Will the chemicals cause hormonal changes? Are there any barrier sunscreens, titanium dioxide, skin, zinc oxide that are waterproof?
That's a good question. There's some growing concern. Some studies have indicated that, yes, chemical sunscreens are absorbed by the body. There were a couple of studies that had expressed concern about increased absorption in kids and the changes of hormone levels. In adults, they are absorbed, but they're found unchanged, passed through the body, so that we don't believe that they are harming adults. For children, in general, in my practice, I do recommend the zinc oxide and titanium dioxide because they are the safest. Their minerals are naturally occurring, and they just sit on the skin and not absorbed. So that is your safest way to go. There are most of them are water resistant, so you want to look for that labeling. Again, the FDA has regulated this labeling, so be confident in when you are looking for your sunscreens, if it's a 30 and water resistant and broad spectrum, that's a wonderful sunscreen for you.
That's the voice of Dr. Molly Menser. She's with Sunflower Dermatology. We're also joined by Dr. Amy Knopper. She's the Dermatology Division Director at Children's Mercy. Again, our topic today, caring for your skin during the summer, 816-235-2888 is our phone number and our email address. Again, UpToDate@KCUR.org. Beverly from Overland Park, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention something that, the doctors have talked about it, but you can have melanoma all over. In on the bottom of your foot. And I wanted to mention vulva, melanoma of the vulva, which I want women to be aware that this happened. I have a friend with it who's been operated on twice with this, and it's, I don't know how common it is or anything, but that's just what I wanted to start sharing, that there's besides your face and your arms, you know.
Yeah. Amy, how common is it?
Well, I think you bring up a very good point. We worry more about melanoma on the palms and soles, particularly in Asian patients and African American patients, what we call acralentiginous melanoma. So that definitely can be a site, and that's not usually a site that we think gets a lot of sun exposure. So I don't think we fully understand why we see melanoma in those locations. I don't know exactly how common melanoma of the vulva is. It's not something I've seen, but I see exclusively children. But I think it just points to the fact that there are areas of skin that may be difficult to examine on our own, and so following with a good physician that's comfortable with doing full skin exams, I think, is extremely important, especially if you have moles in areas such as the genital area.
Mark from Perry, Kansas. Mark, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks so much. I had about a decade of severe ripping off sheets of dead skin sunburns when I lived in Falls Church, Virginia and Hawaii as a child. Mm. And I just had my first melanoma in situ excised a couple months ago. If you haven't talked about melanoma in situ, would you please and also let us know the difference between frequency of diagnosis of that and metastatic melanoma? Thank you.
Okay. Who can fill us in on that? Yeah. Go ahead, Molly.
So melanoma in situ, just refers to melanoma being the top layer of the skin. It's certainly the best outcome. We would love.
It hasn't penetrated.
Has not penetrated, exactly. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, melanoma is really diagnosed or prognostically given its staging based on how thick melanoma is. So it's given a number as far as how deep is that melanoma, how far penetrating is it. The deeper it gets, the more likely it is to metastasize to lymph nodes as well as to other organs such as the liver and the brain, as another caller had expressed, they had experienced. So really melanoma in situ is the best of all. If we have to have a melanoma, melanoma in situ is the more ideal situation.
Okay. I hope that helps, Mark. Angelica from Overland Park, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask Dr. Amy if she can recommend a sunscreen that could help me. I actually am acne-prone, somewhat redness to my face. And so if I don't protect myself, it'll get redder in the summertime. And everything I've tried, even Neutrogena, they seem to clog my pores. So if she has any suggestion, that would be welcome.
Well, I think a lot of it is trial and error. But I would look, when you're looking at your sunscreen options, choosing something that says that it's non-comedogenic. A comedone is a blackhead or a whitehead. So if it's non-comedogenic, it doesn't cause the formation or the development of acne, or oil-free. Those are the two buzzwords that you want to look for on labels. And then I think just trial and error, finding a product that works well for you. But there are many, many products out there. You mentioned Neutrogena. There are several good Neutrogena products, but a growing number of options for you.
How important, one other listener wants to know about heliopacks in suntan lotion. Is that an ingredient that's important?
I believe Helioplex is a molecule that was introduced by the Neutrogena company that they use. So that you might see that on their labeling, particular to that brand. But really, it's just a form of a sunscreen, a chemical sunscreen in particular.
Nothing magical about it.
No.
Okay. Let's go to Marcia from Prairie Village. Marcia, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering, I've seen more products that have an SPF of 30 and also a bronzer in them. I was wondering if you had any information on the effectiveness of those.
Bronzers in suntan lotion. What about it?
I would think that was probably just someone who's wanting to have a tan appearance, but I wouldn't expect that it would give you any additional benefit, more of just a personal preference if you want a little bit of bronzing at the same time you're putting on your sunscreen.
Anything dangerous about it?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any.
Yeah. Hope that helps, Marcia.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Anna from Kansas City, Missouri. Anna, you're on the show. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I had two questions. The first one is how you feel about coconut oil as a skin protectant.
From a sun protection standpoint, coconut oil really does not have any sun protection features to it. So you would want to, if you are using that, for instance, some people use that for moisturization, I would still encourage you to wear a designated sunscreen.
Okay. And then the other question, my husband was a roofer for many years and in the sun a lot. He used to have a lot of moles on his back, and now they're gone and there's pink spots where they used to be. Is this something that should be looked at?
If there are changes to any moles, they should be evaluated by a dermatologist. So I would suggest that he does have them evaluated.
Okay. Is it common for moles to, it seems like they melted off. Is that something that happens to them?
Not oftentimes. This isn't something I have seen before. I think as we mature into our later years, sometimes moles do regress, so they are thought to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But that really happens in the older population. So, again, I think the safest thing would be for him to be evaluated.
Amy, just quickly, if you do wind up getting a sunburn, what should you do to treat it?
Well, I think it depends on how severe it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think, keeping the body cool with maybe doing some like lukewarm compresses on the affected skin may be helpful. If the skin actually blisters and peels, using a bland emollient might be helpful to also accelerate the healing of that skin.
Right, right. Okay.
Some people use topical steroids to minimize inflammation as well. There's not a lot of evidence-based medicine out there on how to best treat sunburns, and from what I've run across.
Well, we're out of time, but boy, thank you for your time today. You both were just terrific. Lots of good advice, and we sure appreciate you coming in. It was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Amy Knopper is the Dermatology Division Director at Children's Mercy Hospital. Dr. Molly Menser is with Sunflower Dermatology. You can find more information about all of our broadcasts at kcur.org. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Caitlin Brennan. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.